I'm a mountain boy, all right? So this whole being at sea level business is new to me. My ideal type of spiritual retreat is finding a good high spot and just sitting and being in the presence of God. And as you can imagine, that is much easier to do in the hills of Appalachia than it is to do here. I will say, though, that after nearly 6 months here in Norfolk, I have finally conquered that rugged peak that is Mount Trashmore just last weekend. It is the highest point in the land. Mountains are important to me, and they are important in a biblical sense as well. We have countless readings about mountains, many of which point to their wilderness state and thus a sense of vulnerability and opportunity. Think of Moses on Mount Sinai. Think of the Transfiguration. Think of the Sermon on the Mount. And today's reading from Isaiah is no different. A voice cries out, "In the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be lifted up, and every mountain and hill made low. The uneven ground shall become level, and the rough places a plain. Then the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all people shall see it together, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken." Today's reading from Isaiah speaks of a great equalizing, a great reckoning. Every valley shall be lifted up, and every mountain and hill made low. This is a beautiful metaphor for what happens when God's reign of goodness is ushered in, something that we await and celebrate this Advent season. It's what those in Isaiah's time were waiting for, too. Those in the middle of what we know as the Babylonian exile await the great return of God, the great return to their land, a great reckoning where all is restored. "Comfort, O comfort my people," says the prophet. But as a mountain boy, I don't take kindly to this idea of leveling mountains off. Perhaps this serves as a reminder that when prophets like Isaiah speak, they are not speaking their own words, they speak the words of God. So it is God that promises to bring about this reckoning. It is God who offers to bring comfort. We might be wise to remember that the things God can accomplish are not the same as the things we can accomplish. If we were to take Isaiah's message literally, we might be fooled into thinking that we can and should move mountains. Being a mountain boy and having a degree in Appalachian studies and being one that generally cares about the environment, I know all too well about the process of mountaintop removal. It's a coal mining process where an entire mountain is blown to bits to access small seams of coal buried deep within, inaccessible by other types of mining. The rock and soil removed from the mountaintop needs to go somewhere and is often put directly into the valleys below, polluting streams and drinking waters for countless numbers of God's creation, human and animal alike. It's a literal representation of what God prophesies in Isaiah. "Every valley shall be lifted up, and every mountain and hill be made low." Except it's all for the wrong reasons. Communities across Appalachia and throughout the world have been irrevocably harmed by this mining practice. Mountains and valleys have been destroyed. Waterways and habitats have been decimated. This is no great reckoning. This is no great equalization. This is hubris. This is injustice. This is not what God is talking about. We don't have the power of God. Isaiah's prophecy is not speaking about the literal moving of mountains, but about the change that God is bringing into the world, a change that we are invited to be a part of. And while I have no doubt in my mind that God could indeed move a mountain should God want to, it might behoove us to ask why God is moving the mountain in the first place. Time and time again, when we ask a question about why God is doing something, the answer comes back to one simple reason: love. God's love for the world, God's love for you, God's love for God's people, God's love for all of creation. The God who created you, the God who created the mountains, the God who created the valleys and the streams, the grasses and the flowers, is the same God who comes down in the form of Jesus Christ. The same God who comes down to be incarnate in human form. The same God who comes to bring about the great equalization, the great reckoning. And as we know from Isaiah, it's not a reckoning of wrath and vengeance, but one of comfort, grace, and love. It shouldn't surprise us, then, that the author of Mark's Gospel chooses to open his telling of the good news with our reading from Isaiah. Doing so frames the work of God in Jesus Christ as one of comfort, mercy, and compassion. It frames the work of God as being out in the wilderness. We understand John the Baptist to be that voice crying out in the wilderness, preparing people for the true reckoning of love and grace coming into the world. John foretells of Jesus' radical and world-altering ministry. We know how that ministry ends. We know the work that he goes to do on the cross. We know the grace, comfort, and love that Christ shows to the whole world, and I am here to tell you that the same rule applies to Christ's work as it does to Isaiah's prophecy. We might be wise to remember that the things that God can accomplish are not the same as the things that we can accomplish. The things that Jesus Christ comes to do are not the same as what we are tasked to do. Let us not delude ourselves into thinking that we are Christ. We are not the saviors of this world, and thank God for it. Because when we pretend to have the powers of God, we often fall into deep traps, traps that hurt others and hurt ourselves. Whether it be blowing up mountains, or thinking that we have the right to judge others, or falling into the false narrative that it is all up to us alone. God's promise through Isaiah for comfort is still true for us today, but something is distinctly different about us and those in Isaiah's time. We are no longer in exile. The incarnation of God in Jesus Christ has changed the world forever. We are not in exile, for the light of the world has come. We are not in exile because we have been shown the grace and mercy of God through Jesus Christ. We are not in exile. We are out in the field doing the work of the disciples. We are in the wilderness. And as we have seen time and time again, great things happen in the wilderness. Yes, it is vulnerable here. Yes, it is dangerous. Yes, it is frightening. But the God who can literally move mountains is with us. So the question on this side of Easter, on this side of the incarnation, is centered around how we can enter into God's good work. John's voice crying out in the wilderness gives us some indication. John points to Christ. John points to the coming ministry of Jesus. While the whole arc of Jesus' ministry is about our salvation, which is his work to accomplish, we can't overlook Jesus' ministry of teaching. That is our work. That is the work we are invited to do with God. Through Jesus' action in the world, we can begin to see how we are meant to act. Care for the poor. Lift up the lowly. Fight injustice, feed the hungry, exude love in any way that we can, teach others their value in God's eyes, and for God's sake, pray. Maybe these sound trivial and overused. Perhaps it's because we say them too much, but neglect to actually act on them. Because to truly act on the teachings of Jesus Christ is to take a step out into the wilderness. It is to take a step out into vulnerability, a step out into divine opportunity. The salvation of the world, the great reckoning, the great equalization has already been made possible in Jesus Christ. That is God's work, and God has made it so. Our work is in the wilderness. Our work is in searching for the parts of our world, communities, and lives that need comfort, need grace, need love. Our work is in sharing what we have already received. Our work is about being a part of the goodness that God has made manifest in all creation, in each and every person. It's a task that is monumental in its ask, mountainous even. So this Advent, may we accept that invitation from God, remembering that we do not do the work of God, we do the work with God. Because if we want to move mountains, we better do it with the one who created them in the first place. Amen.